I just love people, man. I freaking love everybody. I really do. I don't have to know you. I don't have to interact with you. I don't think I've even have. I don't even have to meet you. I truly do love you.
Welcome to With Those I've Journeyed, an exploration of life's contours, intersections, and developments. I'm Ben Kickert, and today I'll be sharing a conversation I recently had with a dear friend from my past, DG Hollams. I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking that the last 12 months have been a time of incredible anxiety, stress, disappointment, and for many, pain. I personally struggle to remain upbeat and positive in the face of such widespread frustration. However, I am fortunate to have people in my life who have the ability to maintain a perspective of hope and encouragement, and DG is definitely one of those people for me. DG and I first met through our leadership roles in the Methodist Church in Kentucky, so part of the conversation today may include some churchy language that many are not familiar with. But despite that, I hope that you are able to be as encouraged as I have been by listening to the highlights of this conversation as we catch up on life and discuss ways to view the world around us. I think you'll find DG's optimism in the face of struggles can be contagious. Enjoy our conversation.
When I started doing the math in my head and I started thinking like, okay, so I was in Swaziland for 7 years and I've been back here for 2.5 years. And then I realized like, oh my goodness, like we're literally talking about a decade since we've been together. Yeah. So
that really is crazy.
That's
ridiculous. Yeah, man, I've gone through so much shit.
Well, and I'm assuming that in the last 10 years, nothing has changed. We can just pick up exactly where we're at with the same assumptions as 2010. So
yeah, I'm still frustrated with the church.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just I've been hurt a lot more by it now. That's pretty much the only difference.
So let's get like the quick niceties out of the way so we can get deeper. Like what is going on? Like what is your now looking like? What is the what is up with DG and Tiffany and Gracie, of course, but
yeah. So but we're here in Austin, Texas, and my family leave. My wife is a deacon, so she can be anywhere she wants, and they can be appointing her. So she is a treatment foster care agent. And then I am currently, since I'm on family leave, the reason we moved to Austin is to be able to take care of my father-in-law who's got Parkinson's.
Okay.
And so we moved to Austin thinking, okay, he's not going to, you know, probably won't have him live with us much longer, and we want him to get to know his granddaughter a little bit better.
Right.
And so we moved to Austin, and that amazing old man is just kicking it. He's awesome. He's one of my heroes. I mean, he's just like, hey, you got Parkinson's. He's like, okay, I'm going to keep on going fishing until I'm going to, right. I mean, I think he's even fainted twice, like on a dock, like could have died going into the water, but still just keeps on trucking along.
Yeah. You got to do what you got to do.
And so yeah, exactly. And so, you know, the family leave is going longer than what we ever expected it to go, but it's what a blessing, you know, what a great problem to have. The Methodist Church in New Mexico keeps on saying like, where are you? Hello, you know, kind of a thing. And so I keep on just trying to tell them like, hey, we love New Mexico. Like, I want to go back. I love New Mexico. There is something special and holy for me about the desert for some reason. The simplicity that's found there. I just absolutely love the desert. I fell in love with it when we lived there in Santa Fe, and also when we lived there when we went to Albuquerque, lived around Albuquerque too. But anyway, so that's the plan, is to go back eventually someday. We're just going to keep on chugging along here. And we got our daughter, Gracie, who's 9 now. And we got her Timmy was in the room with the delivery of the Tummy Mommy, which is so cool, crazy cool. And so, yeah, we're surviving. I'm working at Apple right now. It's just one level above Peon. At Apple. So I'm a senior tech advisor for Apple Pay. So anything dealing with the Apple credit card, the wallet, cards inside the wallet, stuff like that. So anyway, I'm frustrated in that role a little bit just because, you know, I'm used to being a senior pastor of 500 and a staff of 10 to 13 and answering to a board. And yet here I am not in management and just taking calls at a call center kind of a thing. So, but Apple is a pretty amazing company and they take care of their employees like nobody's business. And so the benefits are really good. And the pay is surprisingly good for what the role is. Although I'm used to making probably double in a pastor salary. So we're, so just like anybody else, we're swimming in debt and living paycheck to paycheck right now and things like that, but that's okay. I've learned to live loving the simplicity. So,
well, I mean, just in terms of context, if we're looking at this kind of as a conversation that others will be following as well, I think it's, you know, important to kind of note that, you know, if you're looking at how you and I have tied together, you know, we're looking at kind of formal ties within the church, but a healthy discontent within that. And, and we've kind of gone our own ways. And I love actually what you're saying about Apple. And it's one of the things that I wanted to follow up with, because I remember, I don't know if I can say you were making waves, but like the idea of bivocation, like of having that pastoral side, but saying, whoa, if I only spend my time within the walls of the church, like I'm pretty sure I'm kind of missing out on the model here. So like, just to kind of add that into it, like there's a fascinating side, you know, to our journeys here in terms of what that looks like, because I think that, you know, you look at the power and the flaws of the church, the power and the flaws of, you know, kind of being in society, and you're like, why not both? Like, you know, the meme says or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, even as you're talking about these things, like that's one of the things I was really interested in following up on, because if I remember right, when you left Kentucky, you went back to New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
And then
Santa Fe.
Okay. So were you not really intentional about saying, no matter what, even though I'm an elder, I want to make sure that I have a bivocational option within what you were doing, or am I misremembering things, which is very
No, 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 you're right. You're right. No, no. When I was, I mean, that was the first appointment I ever had, you know, straight out of seminary. And so it was an associate pastor position. And I enjoyed hanging out with atheists and agnostics more than I did Christians. You know, I just felt there was more authenticity. I felt there was more love, to be honest with you, in most cases, not all cases, of course, and people are people and everyone's different, but yeah. And so I would kind of request, like, hey, is there any possible way, you know, that I could work at Starbucks or, you know, something like that. And it just made sense financially too. Like, I mean, why are we spending all this money as a church to all these pastors and paying, you know, tons of money for all these different things when they could be just spent more wisely, I would feel. And so why build a building when Starbucks has built a building for us and they have great bathrooms and they stay clean and they have a parking lot. And I didn't get it. I still don't get it a lot of cases, especially mega churches and things like that. But I just didn't see that was the way that Jesus or God had in mind for building community. But I mean, and then of course, when I was a church planner in Kentucky, I was begging them, you know, can I please go get another job that would lengthen out the amount of time that you're giving me to become successful in their eyes. And it would also give me an opportunity to be able to be developing relationships and loving the community and finding out what my community's real needs were, because I'm actually interacting with the community, you know, more often instead of just being in this Christian holy huddle bubble thing that a lot of them like to stay in. And so, I mean, that was always a big part of it for me. I always wanted to do that. And so, and the cool thing is, I mean, now I can be able to tell people that I've worked at Tesla and I've worked with Apple, and I have that experience behind me, and the church needs to be in a reformation if it's not already in it. I really feel it that life has given me opportunities to be able to have different experiences, to be able to redefine what community looks like, and then hopefully what Christianity could possibly look like in the future. But yeah, I mean, I love that idea. I think the Methodist Church at the time, and still to a large extent, they just, you know, they've only known one way, or at least the last two generations have only known one way. And anything that's different or weird, it's a little bit scary, or very scary for a lot of people.
Well, and I think the isolation, regardless of what you're talking about, it's easy at this point to view everything politically or ideologically or through the lens of religion. But generally the isolation of, you know, I'm only surrounded with people who are like me. And while I am not an overtly social person, like I am not a, certainly not an extrovert, although I feel comfortable in social settings when I need to, the settings that I do tend to seek out are the ones that are as diverse as possible. To be honest, like when I look back at my time in the church, that was probably one of the things that was most encouraging to me, like from an intergenerational point of view. Like there are so few times where you have, you know, 6-year-olds and 80-year-olds who are interacting that aren't part of the same family. And you look at it, and different churches are better and worse at this, but, you know, from socioeconomic point of view, a place where you can have an auto mechanic and a CEO, you know, interacting, like that's huge. And I find now that's not a shaping event in my life. I still find myself drawn to, you know, how can I interact with people who are not like me? Like right now I'm doing, I do a lot of volunteer trail maintenance work here around Asheville and on the Blue Ridge Parkway the Sea Trail. And one of the favorite things about it is like, I'm the youngest guy that comes out there by about 30 years. And you know, I'm in my late 30s. Like, I miss that opportunity to interact with people who, you know, I'm not going to, you know, meet them in hipster bar or whatever, but like I get to meet them on the side of the trail. And it's just that opportunity to break down. You know, I don't just want to sit down with people who share my political views. I don't just want to sit down with people who have my, and I think we're missing that. Like I thought we were missing that 10 years ago, but now as I've kind of left society, left American society and come back, I'm like, guys, like, you know, you're such a diverse place, but you're only surrounding yourself. Like people are seeing that as like, great, I can find people just like me, no matter where I'm at. No, like that's it's a loss. It's a loss for sure.
Well, and I think half of that is like just like you're saying, a lack of opportunities for that to happen. Like for example, like when I was in high school, I grew up in the panhandle of Texas, and I refused to wear boots. I refused to listen to country music because I wanted to be different, and I didn't want to fit into the crowd because that's just who I am. I want to stick out. That's just who I love to be, and so. It took until college for me to realize that there were people that had the same likes that I did. And when I realized that, I was like, what? You're kidding me. There are other people like me in the world. Like, but I had to have that experience. If I would have just stayed in Podunk, West Texas, which is not a bad place. Don't get me wrong. I love where I grew up. I had so many values that are instilled upon me that I love and I treasure. But wow, it didn't even open up my mind until I actually had other experiences to be able to realize what I was missing. And just like you said, you know, I think that social media was already causing the insularness of what was going on before COVID. And then COVID hit and everyone, you know, now we're staying at home and we're focusing even more on that social media. And that, man, I'm telling you, that has... I think that's just been the thing that's just caused so much of the issues of realizing that we're not realizing, but only being bombarded and with a community that is really small and thin and never at all giving you experiences beyond. I'll never forget. I sat down with Richard Rohr, who I can call him as a dear friend. I'm not just name dropping. He really is a friend of mine because I lived in Albuquerque. And got to see him a lot. And I'll never forget, I first walked up to him and I was like, dude, what are we supposed to do? Because at the time I was in Albuquerque, I was the pastor of a church that was a church plant, which just basically means a new church. And I was told that it was a young church. And I was like, hey, that's great. I'm in my 30s. I got a chin beard and a tattoo. I'm going to be, you know, this will be good. Well, I get there and they were talking about how long the church had been around, not the membership of the church. And so the membership of the church is about, I'd say average age of 75, 76. It was a church plant for retirees, and they were smart. I think that's good. I think that's smart, you know, because they still actually had this understanding of tithing. And, you know, so if you want to be a safe, secure kind of church, man, go do a church plant for assisted living centers. And there were literally like 6 assisted living centers in Rio Rancho at the time, right around that same area. I mean, it's crazy. And of course, they just thought I was just off my nut, man. I mean, just thought that I was so crazy and stupid that I cared about my community. And, you know, I kept on telling them stuff like, man, if you could just realize that if every one of us, you know, here in this group would just foster one couple with that has a kid to be able to mentor them and love them and just give them life advice. The church would be exactly what you would be making waves within the community and loving people and transforming lives. But that's the first time I saw like people that were just so inundated with Fox News. Mm. They were literally saying some things to me like, well, I don't even know if you're a Christian. You know, you don't act like one. You don't talk like one, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, well, no, I don't act like your understanding right. of what, you know, a Fox News Christian is or whatever else. And so that's when I first really started realizing there was a massive polarization going on. It was still underground though. And I, for some reason, God allowed me to be able to have a place where I could actually feel that pulse on it. And so I remember asking Richard Ross, like, where is this polarization coming from? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, there is nationalism going on in my church. It's not patriotism,
right?
With a little bit of Jesus. It is full on. My country is my Jesus, and there is no blending. You know, there is no separation between the two. And Richard, I'll never forget. Father Richard was like, I really wonder if it actually came from the church. It's originated wow. there. And I was just like, yeah, okay, I can yeah. easily see that. You know, I can easily see that. But then, you know, and I think with that wisdom, and then along with these other commentaries, documentaries I've seen, not commentaries, but documentaries, I'm realizing that, you know, it came from all sides.
It's obviously. Been there. Yeah, absolutely.
It's completely been there, and it came from all sides. But I don't think that all these things are just like a perfect storm of you know, what's going on and what's happening in society right now. But I did not mean to get on the society thing.
Well, let me circle back, because you're talking about being kind of with that older church, and you're in, you know, working with Apple now, which I'm sure your clientele has its own demographics that shape it. It's interesting to me to think about this in terms of COVID as well. When you had mentioned that, it kind of hit me that those places where we're willing to violate our own bubble and say, okay, you know, I'm not seeing anybody, but, you know, I'm going to get together with this group. We're going to stay 20 feet away and just be able to have some interaction. One of the things that I think is happening with COVID is that who we're allowing into our circles is much more defined. And it's very difficult to have those random conversations. Even the ability to break out of your bubble has been complicated so much that the types I'm curious, because we're pushing a year in on this. Like, how does having a year of most of your interactions being either shaped by media, which tends to normalize people's reactions, or by the people who, you know, we've narrowed our friend group. It's going to play out. We're going to see how it happens. And I imagine for a person like you, like this, like COVID, as an extrovert, COVID has to be incredibly trying, you know, in terms of getting that energy.
Yeah, no. Ironically, I have actually become a lot more contemplative in the course of my life, just because that's the only way I could be able to survive, to be honest with you. But, now that I consider myself, I'm ambidextrous when it comes to being contemplative or being extroverted, you know, introverted, extroverted, ambidextrous. And I think I'm I think I'm appreciating and loving being by myself so much more now.
Interesting.
Which I think has been a huge blessing for me in my life, to be honest with you. I've gone through all kinds of stuff. I mean, I'm still taking meds right now for basically PTSD from what the church has done to me, for anxiety and depression. And so those meds have helped immensely, because I found out that if you're an extroverted person and you're depressed, that it just comes out as anger. Hmm. And, which is not a good, it's not a good thing. I wouldn't punch a wall or hit anybody. Obviously, I would just, you know, it was mostly verbal or whatever else. But man, I just was always on edge. I was always just angry at the drop of a hat. I mean, Tiffany would tell you, like, a leaf would land on my shoulder, and I'd be like, "Fucking son of a leaf!" And she's like, "Yeah, you're not normal. Could you please go talk to somebody?" But anyway, but side note, but you know, honestly, in the time, it's really funny, because right before COVID hit, I started having a conversation with another pastor here in the conference that was a church planner, and he was really longing for the rhythm aspect of praying the hours, or And of course, I was doing that already. I was already doing that, and I you know, have made it just a part of my life. And so he was just like, dude, I need that in my life. I really want to be a part of that. And so that actually started to develop into a deep relationship. And Tina and I really aren't, you would think that we would be like, hey, we're going to be friends with so many people, but we're friends with everyone. And I'm a pretty freaking open book. So it's not like I don't have any problems opening up to somebody. I'll tell them anything. I don't care. You know, faults as well as blessings or whatever else in me. But we don't really have like super close friends, like people mm-hmm. that I could really like just really, really, share life with. And so even though people would probably think we're crazy by seeing that, you know, I'm on the max number of people I can have on Facebook and, you know, stuff like that. But it's true though. I've never really had like super, super close, maybe four or five of my entire life that mm-hmm. I just would like pour my heart out to. And so COVID was really not, it really wasn't that big of a deal for me. If anything, I felt like I needed to provide that community for others instead of for my own needs. I feel like mm-hmm. I needed to do it for everybody else. And that's one of the reasons I started doing the prayers. Of course, I'm always a communal person. I like doing, like I'm a contemplative, I'm an extroverted contemplative is what I describe myself as.
Right. But
I still want people to experience contemplation or meditation or prayer in community. I still think that communal peace is super important for the humanity within everyone. And so I'm so passionate about making sure that, you know, that community piece is there still, because there are people that just don't have any connection, you know, they have nothing. They don't have a spouse. They don't have a dog. They don't have a cat. They don't have, you know, any connection to something other in their life. And so I wanted to make sure that whatever I'm doing is still, you know, so there's other people involved in it. But yeah, COVID hasn't really, I know it's kind of a weird,
might not
be the expected answer, you know, of an extroverted person, but I've come to really love it. I've come to appreciate it, and it's forced us to live more simply, which is beautiful. It's forced us to be closer as a family, and we're getting a lot more like almost like family rituals, which is what I love. I love having family rituals and doing that, you know, with my daughter, not just, you know, with my wife and us. And
and this is a very selfish way, I think, for me to view it in relation to you. But when I think about DG and Tiffany, like, you all are like the power couple of positivity. I don't want to make this transactional, because it certainly isn't. But I think about from the conversations and the time that we've had together, I think about how many people are missing DG and Tiffany time, like that because you all are such positive people. And again, I mean, there's a need, the self-care element has to be included in that conversation. But like, I've been stoked about this call for, you know, since I reached out, cause I'm just like, my God, it's been 10 years. Like, this ability to connect. So.
Yeah, exactly. No. And I'm honored. I mean, thank you for saying that. I mean, it's if I really am ambidextrous with being introverted and extroverted, I get jazzed up no matter what I'm doing. You know, it's like yes, it's like my tank is always empty and I'm just always constantly having to fill it up, and I've just found ways I can fill it up with it. But I mean, I don't know. I just, life is still, even though I've been through so much crap in my life, mm-hmm. and people have hurt me to the core. I mean, like I said, I'm taking meds for PTSD from what the church has done to me. And yet I'm still in it. Life is still good. Life is still worth it. Life is still, for me, even if the world was just falling apart all around me, I'm the weird guy that's just like, you know, it's like the meme with the dog, you know, it's like all the fire is going all around him. It's like, yeah, the world's going to shit and I don't care. You know, I got my coffee, but mine's not that. It's, but there is a part of me that's just like, no matter what happens, I mean, I'll never forget. I was in seminary when the planes hit, you know, the Twin Towers. I was sitting on my couch. I was about to go to one of my classes and I just thought to myself, this is just a very visual way of expressing the fact that society is missing the mark. And it was just very logical for me. I mean, it's almost like I had a little bit of my dad who I just say was always best friend with Spock. You know, it's just like, it was just super logical. Like, this is just what it looks like.
Right.
This is just what it looks like when society misses the mark. They're not really being who they could be or should be. And this is just a very real, visual, tangible way of seeing that. You know, my mind does the same thing when it comes to, you know, the polarization of society. And I'm just like, yeah, this is just a real, true, tangible, visual way of visceral, in a lot of cases, you know, of a world that's just kind of broken.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, it's like, do I want to go a Star Wars and have red lightsabers and blue lightsabers that are very, very clear about who's evil and who's not? Or do I want to go a Star Trek that says, hey, what if a vision of a future looked like everyone got along and we could combine resources and we can go search the rest of the galaxy? And, you know, we've gotten over all the pettiness and things like that. And so there's just a part of me. It's just like, I'm a person of faith. I'm a Christian. So I still have a hope that, you know, after this life, that there is something out there, and that, you know, whether it happens in this life or not, hopefully it'll happen the next, you know. It's like, I'm okay with that. I'm cool with that part too.
One of the most influential books that I read because we both went to the same seminary, but it was Brueggemann's Prophetic Imagination. And what I love in that is his concept of prophecy, not as predicting the future, but as, you know, speaking something new into existence. And he has the two sides of the same coin of criticizing and energizing, where there are things that you have to say that, like, it doesn't have to be this way. Which is an essential part of, you know, of prophetic speech. But the other side is that you have to be able to speak that this is what it can be. And when I think about, you know, people that I've engaged with in my life, like people who can speak into existence, like this is what the world can be like. We're not there yet, but let me paint a new picture.
Yeah.
Like that's what's so exciting about kind of being able to reach back and connect with people from all sorts of different walks of life, is that, you know, for me, in my interactions, your ability to energize a new future is huge. To say it, whether you're talking about church structures or you're talking about a person who has self-doubt, and being able to speak love to them and picture a new and energize a new future. Like, yeah, very candidly, that is what, you're the name that comes to mind. And so, you know, we said that we're going to talk about hope. But to me, I'm looking at not just hope as in, you know, I want to be happy and you know, let's take a sad song and make it better. But instead, like, being able to visualize, being able to say, this is something new, this is something bigger, this is something that, you know, we have to break this old idea out of our mind so that we can see something new. And you do that well. You do that very well. So,
well, thank you. I think that just comes from I just love people, man. I freaking love everybody. I really do. I don't have to know you. I don't have to interact with you. I don't think I've even have, I don't even have to meet you. I truly do love you. I see everyone's full potential. And so I stopped saying accountability and started saying potentiality every time I can, you know, come up with someone and just say, oh my gosh, man, I can totally see you leading, you know, people, or I can totally see you like totally revolutionizing this industry or whatever else, if we can just find you the right people and the right ears to be able to put you in that right place, the right time at the right moment kind of thing. But yeah, I do see people. It's funny. I used to always tell everybody, Tiffany has this just ability. She can be able to look at anyone and just say, they're good, they're not good. I know that person, and that person's aura, or, you know, whatever term you want to give it, their spirit is not a good one. And of course, I'm the guy that's just like making a beeline to everyone that she said they're not good. You know, she's like, that person's not that, you know, there's some evilness going on there. Like, hey man, what's up? Let's go get a beer. You know? and it's just because I'm just like, well, you know, they probably, it's just, like I said, it's ignorance. I have a hope that I can say that everything is still ignorance and not stupidity or it. and I want it to be ignorance. I'm going to will the ignorance into the world. Like, no, you're not stupid. You're just ignorant. You need to be able to learn from this and grow from this. It cracks me up. Even when I was doing the church plant, and then when they pulled the money out from under us and said, you know, either take this church appointment or not. And I said not, which was not the best answer for a good old boy system in Kentucky. And then that's when I went to work in retail at Apple. And I tell people all the time, it's like, man, my Apple store community is way better than any of the churches I was part of, except for the church plant that I was a part of. Other than that, man, I tell people all the time, like it was atheists that were giving me money of grocery store cards. It was not church members that was providing for my family. And there's so much more potential of what society could become for society and the world. That's just crazy.
Hey, it's Ben from the future. Just a quick aside. At this point in the conversation, DG and I started talking about science fiction storylines and dystopian novels. The recent movie Tenet was brought up, and we began discussing what it would look like if the world had a reset button. The details of the movie aren't important, but I wanted to give you some background as we continue the conversation.
How do we, you know, if someone has the potential of destroying all, you know, all life, like everyone, this is not just a country thing, would that be a better restart? You know, kind of a thing. And that's the other thing too, that I really just kind of pull it full circle. I think COVID is that. I think COVID is the reset, or at least it was the potential, or is the potential to be a true reset. Not only for the church that's near and dear to my heart, but for society as a whole. I think that this is an opportunity to be a wonderful wake-up call and to be able to do things differently. Now, whether we're going to live into that or not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that just like anything like that, that some people will rise up that will be change agents and be able to bring about a different understanding, a new understanding. And I think that is just such a cool opportunity for the world as a whole. But are we seeking out and are we empowering and encouraging the change agents to be the change agents and to let them have the microphone?
Like, even going back to what you were saying with September 11th, and that is kind of like, for sure, COVID has been a time of reflection and assessment, and, you know, what really matters and what can you do without, and what is essential and what is secure, what is not secure. But I also think coming out of it is not even a wake up call, but, you know, to use more of a churchy phrase, like, this is a laying bare of what's underneath the surface. And I think that's necessary. I think that, you know, the political discourse at the same time, like, this is a chance that as much as it pains me, because I've always been somebody who has appreciated having those conversations across the board, like I've come to the realization that there are more barriers than I used to think that there were, and that there are views that are being harbored underneath the surface that are much more destructive than I ever did.
Yeah. 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 I think it's a good, the potential good thing to come out of that is that we are hungry for those things, and that we, you know, have the power or have the thought enough about it, aspect of it, to be able to make those healthy whenever, you know, we're hungering for them. We're getting really thirsty for that, but we want to make sure that we're giving stuff that, you know, has vitamins right. And can be good for you and instead of harming for you. Because, you know, when we long for relationships, there's potential for that to be, you know, construed or taken advantage of, or, you know, just like anything else mm-hmm. that we might be having to deal with. But you're right. I think that it is definitely making people long for those kinds of things. And I mean, I hear it from everyone, just like, oh man, I miss just going to a restaurant. I just miss going to a restaurant. Or, you know, and I told somebody the other day, I was just like, I think I miss hugs the most. Like, that's the thing I miss the most out of everything, is just giving a hug, whether it's a stranger or someone else. I always love giving hugs to strangers, because they're like, freaked out by it. But afterwards, they're like, I think that guy's like really nice.
Right, right.
Unless it's a bear, then he's like, was he flirting with me? And I'm like, probably a little bit, but I'm married. You know, okay. But seriously, like, that's probably the one thing I've missed is just hugs. I miss like touch. I think mm-hmm. that touch is super powerful. And of course, I've always said that community always happens around food. I miss eating with others. There's something, it's like the desert for me. There's something holy about eating in community.
Yeah.
That is powerful, powerful, powerful stuff for us.
And when it's funny you say hugs, because that was one of the things that I was thinking through. And I was thinking through, you know, when we've met in our interactions, and I'm like, Deechee's the guy who's like, come here, I want to hug you around the neck. Like that is you. Like that's your personality. And because it's interesting, because I am more of a hugger and a handshaker. And while I can be pretty firm on the outside, like there's an inner desire for that as well.
Sure. I mean, there is just something, I don't know, there's just something human. And I say it in a very positive, good way. There's just something human about, you know, shaking a hand or patting the back of a back or,
yeah. We'll slap on the
ass. You know, and even like, I know sometimes I would do it jokingly. If a dude's really tall, because I'm usually, most of the time, I'm just a little bit taller than the majority of people mm-hmm. at 5'11". But if I have a really tall friend and they're a dude, I just go in and I nuzzle in the man boobs. Like I just, it's not motorboat, but I just kind of just get in there, you know? And they're just like, you know, and they're just like, putting their hand on my head, like,
I don't know what to do.
Go ahead, man. Let's let it out, you know. whatever you need, weirdo. But I think there's something cool about like just this. There is a little bit more intimacy when someone puts their hand on your head when you're hugging.
Yeah.
Or even on the back of your neck when you're hugging. And it's not a romantic thing. It really is
protective.
Kind of like it's a loving thing. You're gonna make me start crying, man. I wish I could hug you.
Hey, I hear you. Well, our podcast for this month is about being hopeful. Next month, we're going to completely solve the animosity around politics. So we'll get that taken care of in February. And then, you know, maybe we can move on to more important stuff when it comes to March. So, you know, starting light, and then we'll take care of the other.
Definitely, definitely. Well, oh my gosh, man. I just, I love you, man. Oh,
it's been
gosh.
Fun. I miss you.
This has just been an honor to be a part of the podcast you guys are doing and tell other people that are involved in it that I love them too. And I wish
I know you do. And you would hug their neck as soon as you see them. I will tell you, I have no idea where things are going to go and what the conversations are going to be. But if the only thing that comes from it is that it gave me a good excuse to get you on the phone and see your beautiful face.
Oh, man, I love it.
Absolutely worth it. So I love you.
Yeah,
and I am going to get you to Asheville. We will figure out the logistics, but it will happen.
Sounds good, man. Sounds really good.
Thank you so much. I look forward to continuing the conversation. It will not be 10 years until the next one.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
I want to thank you, the listener, for following along as I caught up with DG. We ended up talking for 2.5 hours about way more issues than we could ever fit into a single podcast. As you can imagine, there was a lot of great stuff that we had to leave on the cutting room floor. You should know that DG is not just a great thinker who has the ability to see joy in all circumstances, but he's also very much a doer who not only loves his community and those around him, but works hard to set up ways for people to connect. One of those ways is through an intentional community he is establishing called the Order of the Trinity. Due to COVID, it's currently meeting online, but plans are in the works for it to become a place for people to connect and support each other in person, regardless of church affiliation. You can follow along online at facebook.com/theorderofthetrinity. We will also upload a clip of our discussion on this to our website, ivejourneyed.com. Be sure to join us next week as Rod discusses the gradual but significant changes that happen in life with one of his former coworkers. Until then, take care.